The views expressed on the following program of those of its hosts and participants in no way reflect those of the staff or management of WNRI.
The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host, John DePietro.
All right, here we go. The power hour has arrived. Good afternoon, one and all. On this Super Bowl Patriot Monday, February 4th. Boy, everything going our way. The weather, it's over 50 degrees outside. Patriots won the Super Bowl again last night. Tom Brady, Belichick, sixth Super Bowl for them during this era. And then all types of things are exciting. Patriots going to arrive at TF Green Airport next hour, where is their home, and then tomorrow is the big parade in Boston. But in the meantime, we have Political Monday to get to. This portion of the John DePietro Show is brought to you by K's. Stop in and see them, whether it's lunch, dinner, or drink in the lounge. They're waiting for you at K's. Cass Ave and Woonsocket, they do such a terrific job there. You're going to love it. It's K's right across from CBS. Folks, let's talk to him. He is the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com and a very happy Monday to Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John.
Boy, this is a sluggish day for everyone, isn't it, Justin? I mean, it's yesterday, it's like everything was basically on hold, and today, even though it's another Super Bowl victory for the Patriots, you can just kind of feel that everyone is seemingly kind of checked out a little bit today and everyone's a little bit off.
Yeah, everybody's expecting to stay up late, maybe. And also the pitiful commercials during the Super Bowl are kind of hard to get over.
I think that, well, we were just talking off here, the beginning that they did with John Malkovich and then Peyton Manning, that was a funny bit about the Coliseum and everything else. But a lot of the commercials were pretty lame. The halftime show was terrible. The game itself was really not that great. It was the whole thing was kind of off. It was a good thing they won, because otherwise it was not a great game. But let's get to some of the local political news that happened since last Monday, starting with the fact, and even the Providence Journal did an editorial on it, and that is the end of a political dynasty in Rhode Island. News that former senator and former governor and former mayor Warwick, most recently governor and also presidential candidate Link Chafee, has announced or determined that, number one, the wife already left, Stephanie Danforth Chafee. She's already set up residence in Wyoming, of all places. And one of the things about that is, how much has she already set up residence? She already voted there. And he is seemingly going to follow along. They're still going to keep Weehoosen Farm in Exeter, which is Exeter. It's their piece of property that obviously he inherited. It's larger than Central Falls. That's how big the piece of property is where they have the farm. They also have the house in the Pottawamat section of Warwick. But he is moving, and I think the Journal, and I'm glad they did it, because as much as he says, oh, we just want a different scenery and everything else, if anyone really steps back, it's not about that. Wyoming is the reddest state. Even joke, you know, oh, I haven't seen former Vice President Cheney yet, who is probably the biggest known resident in the entire state. But what Chafee, when he was governor, he didn't do anything, Justin, to try to improve the tax climate. I like how the Providence Journal even said in their editorial, when he was the governor, he was always saying, I've been to 49 of 50 states. This is the greatest state. I wouldn't live anywhere else. But Wyoming also, if in fact you're in the situation that Chafee's are, which is inherited wealth, let's face it, they're not earning money now. They're living off the inheritance. They inherited a fortune. They live off money they get from stocks, investments. But then just at some point, they're both in the 60s, he and his wife, when they pass away. Wyoming is really the most tax-friendly state that there is. I'm glad the Journal pointed that out, because when he was governor, he did nothing to improve the tax climate in Rhode Island, really just the opposite. But now, as he's older and basically done with politics, they're moving to Wyoming, which is even more tax-friendly than Florida is.
Oh, yeah. And this story is much, actually, I think, a deeper indictment of Rhode Island's political class than that. I mean, one of the key details that jumped right out at me was their son, Caleb, is, in a former governor's word, thriving in Wyoming with a job of his own, and that's sort of the story of Rhode Island, isn't it? I mean, there's no real opportunity here because the tax and regulatory climates have destroyed that for younger people, and you can't stay here till your death, or we'll take all kinds of money from you. I mean, just a back of the envelope thing. It was reported that last count he was worth $60 million, and if you charge that at 16% estate tax, you're talking almost $10 million. Just poof. Gone into the government maw. And while that would certainly be good news for the people in the government itself, so it's trying to scrape together money, a family that's kind of wearing down its inheritance, it's not such a good thing. And so that's the story of Rhode Island. We drive people out way at the end and right in the meat of their life. And this is actually, to me, the more concerning part. If you look at, and I've gone through all the, you can get statistics of from the IRS and from the census, at what point in people's lives you can start to figure out when they leave. And the real people who've been leaving for the past 15, 20 years, I've called them the productive class. It's people when young families say, you know what, we need to start cashing in on our talents and our abilities and our ability to take risks and all that. We need to make some money and thrive, as JP says of his son. They go elsewhere. And that's what's really killing the state.
You know, you're right. And for him, the wife, you know, his wife, Stephanie, she didn't even wait. I mean, she's already there. She has been there. She set up residence there. She has, she is voting there. They could have, what I think is so glaring is, and let's face it, if they wanted to, they could, maybe they have a ski house and they're going to use it there. And then you come back in Rhode Island in the summertime. There are a lot of people that maybe at one point maybe lived or spent some time somewhere else, but this was their primary residence. But it's not even that. That will be their primary residence. They may own homes and the estate, which, by the way, their taxes in that Weehawken farm in Exeter are very, very low. And when they were in Rhode Island, even though they lived on the east side of Providence, they used the Exeter residence as the lowest because they also didn't want to pay car taxes. So, but this is one of the original five families, and I come back to under him. He instituted all these taxes and fees and doubled the beach fees, and I remember that famous state of the state, even his barber didn't mind paying higher taxes. He wanted to pay tax on grocery. You know, there was no tax he didn't want. He did nothing in his time as governor to try to improve the tax climate. And now they've just decided to take their family fortune, which you say it's, you know, through investments and everything else. He's not earning any money. And they've decided to move out of here. And they didn't do anything about improving the tax climate for the state while he had somewhat of a voice and the power to do it.
Right. And one other thing that state Republicans have been making some good points about this. They're wealthy people, arguably leaving because of the tax climate and the pending, you know, estate tax someday when they pass away. But they're also active, charitable people that are involved in their communities, and those are the kinds of people that you don't want to leave. So it ends up being a loss to a state when you drive out a family like that, you know, unless they're going to do things like run for governor and not do anything very good for 4 years. That kind of changes the equation the other way. But in general, their leaving is really, I mean, in a way, it's like the Paw Sox and it's like all the other stuff that we can't seem to keep a hold of. Rhode Islanders have always been, as a non-native Rhode Islander, it's been notable to me how much Rhode Islanders really take care of or concern about the things that represent the state. You know, next thing you know, we're going to be, you know, lose the patent to coffee milk or something. But we're watching all of these sort of iconic things drift away. And I don't like the idea of political dynasties, but we should take it to heart that maybe we're doing the wrong kinds of things to keep our state moving forward.
Yeah, and the idea that he might, you know, is he done with running for political? I don't, there's no element of that. If he was going to run, he's not going to go there and seek political office. Number one, it's the most red state. Number two, his track record, I mean, he didn't run for re-election because his approval rating was so low. It's 2019. He had that embarrassing run for president. For people to even take him seriously, I was even scoffing at the notion that he was being asked in some way of like, oh, are you still thinking, considering, you know, running for office? His whole foray into politics, it really was. It was based on his family name, and that his father was very successful in politics, but he was the mayor of Warwick. He didn't do anything dramatic in Warwick other than, just kind of no one's ever considered him to be, you know, corrupt in any way, which always then seems to be the standard bearer. But he talked about in 1995, he just signed the teacher's contract. Oh, you can't have labor unrest. But that there's no one is moving to Warwick for their schools or anything of that nature. He then took over the Senate seat because it was his father's Senate seat. He couldn't defend it. He did have that fluke win for governor. But aside from that, when the curtain really was pulled back, he, if he had just, last name had been Link Smith, he was not ready for prime time. He didn't have political instincts. He's not good at it. Always seemed very nervous. Very, very stubborn individual. The run for presidency was a real embarrassment with just the 1%. And then Wolf Blitzer even, like, you know, how much longer are you going to continue this charade? And then him threatening even to run again for governor with against Governor Raimondo, even though there was no support for that. I just find it hard to believe that people are still actually taking it serious. He is not the type of individual that could go in somewhere, set up, you know, get a staff in motion. That is not easy to do. Hillary Clinton, you know, obviously left the White House, went to New York, ran for the Senate. That was successful. And then the same thing, you know, Mitt Romney was the governor of Mass, but then he went back to Utah, and now he is a senator from Utah. But you need to be a special individual, even someone who was very outgoing and a real go-getter. Former Mayor Steve Laffey, he's run now for office 3 times in Colorado and has had his clock cleaned each time. It's not that he hasn't tried to get some kind of momentum going, get back into politics. He just has been very unsuccessful in trying to do that. And Laffey is 1,000 times more of a better, you know, campaigner and policies and speaking and just general impression on people than Chafee ever was. The idea that anyone is saying, oh, maybe he'll run, move there, and, you know, are you going to run for governor of Wyoming? I mean, that is just laughable to me. He's not even worthy of the question.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I actually thought of Steve Laffey as well. You know, whatever his success may have been, the story kind of made sense because Colorado, a bit more libertarian, probably a little more conservative than Rhode Island. So you could kind of see how somebody like Laffey could think, okay, I want to continue in politics. Let me pick a state that might be good for me. It's hard to imagine, you know, Link Chafee saying, you know what, let me go where, you know, 1/5 of people voted for Hillary Clinton. I mean, that's kind of... There's no story to get to into office there. So I believe him when he says that's not the reason he went. And I just looked it up real quick. Just as a note, the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, we have a jobs and opportunity index that measures government, how much government takes away from people and how much people get to keep and how much opportunity there is. Rhode Island's typically 47 to 50 on this over the past 15 years. Wyoming is number one. So
look at that.
That makes a pretty clear story. This is where you go if you want to be able to keep your money, if you want your kids to have an opportunity to find work and not have to collect some kind of welfare benefit. That's the state to which the former governor has gone. And to me, that tells the whole story.
It really does. And for them to try to shy it as something else is just ridiculous. So to him to be like, well, you know, never say never. I'll leave the door open. I mean, it's not happening. It's never happening. And again, what I find the most remarkable is if she was not even going to be part of it, his wife, Stephanie Chafee. I mean, if she moved there instead of voting there, he was still hinting, oh, you know, you don't know. I may jump into the race for governor. I mean, that seemingly was never happening. Let's talk about another story. And I'm so glad that the Journal is taking action. Providence Journal sues Gorbea over voter records. They have filed suit against Secretary of State Nellie Gorbea, saying she violated the state's open records law, denying the newspaper's request for digital copy of the voter database. Now, what we've also learned, Justin, was on New Year's Eve, the Attorney General's office under Kilmartin, before leaving office, I don't know if Peter Nerona's office would have done this, but under Kilmartin, on New Year's Eve, right before they left office, they still refused to hand over or side with the Journal and hand over the information. I find Gorbea, I mean, you go back to the fall, she was being commended for, oh, this tremendous website and there's so much transparency. But then let's look at what's happened since then. You know, she, number one, will not provide an information, and I don't believe any of her rendition of what she's saying of the reason why. I don't think it has anything to do with the fact of trying to protect people's identity. It's not about that. I think the Journal story illustrated clearly what it is. She also, she did this very soft trying to make the media rounds, floating her out that she wanted these building of artifacts and $52 million. She was looking for $5 million to get it going. Governor Raimondo, from what I understand, they've had a falling out, and she didn't give her the $5 million. So Gorbea, she is starting a PAC. She's running for governor in 2022. But I don't know who's advising her, but this is she's not doing anything right now to frame of someone that wants to move ahead. She is term limited out, but her version of why she won't provide this voter information does not hold water in any way, Justin.
No, it's very, very suspicious. And I think actually we called it late in the year last year that Gilmartin's office would reject this.
Yes,
and,
we did.
And then it would go to court. And it's hard to see if it doesn't that it doesn't come out with the Province Journal getting this information one way or another. But it's also difficult to see what the Secretary of State really has an interest here. There's somebody somewhere wants this information to stop being easily verifiable, and that it could be an institutional thing where they, you know, they've got the mail ballot scheme going, and they've got, you know, consistently you find out thousands of dead people or
yeah,
dual registrations or hundreds of thousands of people registered who shouldn't be, or by, you know, statistical calculation. That all points to not having a lot of confidence in the system. And so when the state government just decides, and don't forget, she changed the rule. This, you used to be able to get these birthdays very easily of registered voters, and she changed that rule with no hoopla, just did it on her own. And what that keeps coming back to me as is, under the APRA laws, it matters a lot who you've elected. And when you've got somebody in the Secretary of State's seat who's willing to defend not releasing information, it should be ultimately a political answer. And the problem we have in the state is symbolized in the fact that the Providence Journal endorsed Nelly Gorbea. And probably it wouldn't be surprising if after all this they endorse her again for governor or whatever she chooses to run for next. You know, sort of like they did with Governor Raimondo. Well, she could do better on the education. In Gorbea's case, she could do better with the transparency thing. But nonetheless, we're gonna vote for her. We're gonna endorse her. And this is the problem we have now, is that the entire inside class of Rhode Island has decided it's going to be a one-party state. That's the way it's got to be. We're going to lean left. And so you have to decide. You know, you can't make it that one-sided and then kind of, you know, but it'd be good if you gave us this information, please. You don't get to pick and choose. You have to have a contentious government, or you're going to get a government that does things that you don't like. And this is one of those instances. And it'd be really helpful if the Providence Journal would learn that lesson.
Yeah, one of the things that that I think, though, really stands out amidst all this is, from what I understand, and Ken Block is the one that said, the statute of limitations on voter fraud is only 1 year. So if you're Gorbea, if we want to get this information, and they're betting that maybe in the court it'll hold up or just try to run out the clock delay, by the time anyone fully gets the voter information, there will be no prosecution of this. That's something that should be changed. But there's nothing that she has said that makes sense about denying this information, other than I'm going to say that we're right on the money, that when the information, if it does become to light and become public, that it's going to maybe be worse than maybe we thought. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, she doesn't want it to get out. Now, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. We're speaking with managing editor at OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Justin, this next story is one of those things. If this was anyone else, or this was reverse, you would have seen the party jumping into action. You would have seen Governor Raimondo heavily handed. I think there would have been media attention. But the state police probing this threat against Representative Constantino from this Melanie DuPont, who happens to be the secretary of the Rhode Island Democrat Party Woman Caucus. Now, what she put into that testimony when they were all testifying at the State House last week regarding this extreme radical abortion bill that they want, and she talked about endangering his life. He had every right, the rep, to take that as a threat. Obviously, the state police took it as a threat because they went to see her. She said, oh, no, it was just satire, and some of their defenders and other people, Alquist and the company, oh, no, no, it's just satire. But you haven't seen anyone then announce that she needs to step down as the secretary of the Rhode Island Democrat Party Woman Caucus. I think it is a total double standard that when it suits their means, they say, you know, words matter. And you can't do that, and you can't say that type of thing. If this were ever reversed, that someone had used testimony, pro-life, against a female rep like a Jello, a Gail Golden, or Tansy, or one of that crowd, it would be completely upside down. They would have been screaming for the person's head. They would have been screaming that person needs to be removed from their organization immediately. And I think it's very disingenuous for the progressives and their defenders to try to say that when someone makes, in this case, a death threat against Lincoln Representative Greg Constantino, oh, no, no, it's okay because she just meant it as satire. These people, they are so full of themselves. They literally make it up as they go along.
Oh, yeah, and that's what's galling. I mean, I tend to fall on the more free speech side of things. You know, everybody grow a little thicker skin and we can all get along. But the double standard here is outrageous. I mean, if you think back to when Congresswoman Gabby Giffords was shot, it was all about civility, and Sarah Palin had a picture of her district with the crosshairs over it, which is a threat. And that's all we heard for years. And yet now, this is supposedly, oh, you know, metaphors are okay. It's okay to say I want to endanger your life. You know, we do need to have a more thorough, thoughtful discussion of that. I think not that long ago, his name's kind of been memory-holed in the mainstream media, but you've got James Hodgkinson, who shot up a field of congressional Republicans. Now, that's nobody who used a metaphor about violence is to blame for that, but that's the kind of environment that can develop when you've got people making statements like this as if you know, protecting unborn children is a threat to people's lives. And that's one of the things, that extreme kind of careless rhetoric, that I think we could all use some growing up and realizing what we're talking here and a little bit of thought. I mean, if you're just even looking at what she was saying with satire, it's almost hard to believe. She was talking about comparing abortion to vasectomies. And in general, vasectomies are not to cure a fatal illness, and neither is pregnancy a fatal illness. So this idea that the two are equatable, and that holding back a bit on, say, partial birth abortion is threatening women's lives, it shows a kind of a delusion that many people, sadly, including our governor, are operating under. And that's actually the scariest thing to me. And if you persuade people that certain people in the General Assembly are threatening women's lives, that can get people riled up. They know that. They just don't want to take the next step and take responsibility for the possibility of that becoming violence. And we've discussed before in the prior legislative session, maybe 2 years ago, progressives out on the lawn of a Providence representative who had a bit more conservative view on, I think it was, immigration than they liked. So you start to piece all these things together, and you can really see maybe how somebody like me, whose preference is, you know, let's all just grow thicker skin, you can start to see how that the times are changing around that, where everything becomes political, everything has a sort of threat behind it, and the worst of all, it's all one way. It's always a threat when a conservative or Republican says something even mild, and it's never a threat when somebody on the left says something that's arguably over the line.
That is exactly right. And Justin, I think, again, the silence is deafening. From Raimondo wouldn't go to the hearing, but she penned that letter of support, you know, talking about the abortion hearing, which was appalling how they were so robotic. They were so, you know, this Women's Productive Freedom Act. It's all national talking points that they're trying to execute as far as, you know, get across, following the talking points from Emily's List and Planned Parenthood. But Governor Raimondo, for her to say, oh, I just want to maintain the status quo, Teresa Tandy put on Twitter, we're not going backwards past the Reproductive Health Care Act in Rhode Island. They're so disingenuous with their argument. This is not about preserving the status quo. This is not about going backwards. There's nothing pending in front of the Supreme Court. This is about moving Rhode Island forward with extreme abortion language, which would permit an abortion right at the moment of delivery, and that Governor Virginia, as much as Virginia may have defeated that legislation, but their intent was that it could in fact be, as the governor described, Mr. Blackface and Klan outfit, that in fact that after the child is born, the mother has a conference with the doctors, and then she decides whether or not she wants a child. Team Raimondo, they're fully on board with all that. And what I find so despicable is to try to hide that in the shroud of, we don't want to go backwards. We need to protect a woman's rights. We're going to keep the status quo. We don't know what's going on in Washington. We need this whole element of, it reminds me of the, you know, the want and need, the difference of I need this or I want this. They don't need this. There's nothing happening. This is, they just want this, and this is being rolled out all over the country.
Yeah, and it gives you some indication that there's some political, they're trying to win over some constituency, set up the playing field for maybe the 2020 election or perhaps the appointment of the next Supreme Court justice. There's some other reason they want this in the news this much. And you mentioned the governor of Virginia, and think about how crazy our times are, that the guy admitted on radio that he supported infanticide. He said, if a child is born, you know, we'll keep the child comfortable. And he wasn't even infant. He used the word infant. We're not talking fetuses here anymore. We're talking about an infant. We'll keep it comfortable while the mother and the doctor decide what to do. And then what? You snuff it out. That, I mean, there's no ambiguity here now. And that, no word from the governor, who's, you know, the head of the Democratic Governors Association. None of that. A picture from 1984 comes out in which he's in a racist costume, it appears. That we've got to turn the world upside down, and he ought to leave office. I mean, just the idea of that. You can support infanticide, no problem. Take a bad picture when you're in grad school, and that's it. Your career's over. We're really in bizarre times, and we need to start deciding what actually should be important to us, and not let it be dictated to us by what an elite group thinks is outrageous or not.
You know, that is an excellent point. And Governor Raimondo was very slow off the take. I mean, Friday night, you had the New Jersey governor, who's the vice chair of the Governor Association, saying that the governor of Virginia should go down. I can't get over how, you're exactly right, there was no comment. I'm glad Bishop Tobin spoke out last week, because Governor Raimondo definitely tries to wear the whole Catholic thing on her sleeve. And then suddenly he was saying, you know, what they're proposing up there, the silence from her, and just the letter that she penned for them, that was all what the governor of Virginia talked about. That was all within bounds. It was the outfit of him with the blackface and the Klan outfit. Suddenly now they're all appalled by it, just like the chief of police in Casablanca. But and I'm glad that it took her till Saturday to finally come out and say that, in fact, he should step down. And I'm, you know, what a week for him. I mean, he's framed in that way, and now this is the party that, you know, I don't, as someone said on Twitter, I don't want to hear one more time these people say, I don't want to hear anyone say building the wall is immoral. You're talking about a party that wants to have legislation would make it permissible after birth to end the life of the little infant that was just born. And they have a Democrat governor of Virginia who's saying, it is true that I wasn't either blackface or Klan, but you can't prove it was me in either one, and I'm not sure I was there because I was at another event wearing Michael Jackson shoe polish with moonwalking. I mean, I am so glad that guy got front and center, because that, to me, is the Democrat Party of 2019.
Right, and I mean, it all goes another, talking about social media memes, I mean, it goes back to the origins of Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood, and the Democrat support of abortion was in many ways racist to begin with. And that's one of the things that's astonishing. You look at, on this reproductive health care stuff, you see minority representatives up there saying, you know, we need to preserve the rights of minority women, but minority babies are aborted in many larger numbers than proportionally than white babies. And the idea that this is, I mean, it all connects back in this history of these Democrat parties. And so we do get a look in the Virginia governor at the connection there. I mean, at this point, it's not connected out. the two issues have grown apart from their origins. I don't want to imply that, but you do start to see the legacy of these policies, and it's almost stunning how clear it can all become, and yet we're still all in our little camps fighting, you know, left versus right, blue versus red, when really we've got a good opportunity for awakening. And I tend to doubt, well, sort of like watching Lincoln Chafee leave the state. We've got a lot of evidence that we need to consider and maybe start reevaluating how we do things and conduct ourselves.
Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show, even though it is Patriots Bowl Monday. And apparently, I just saw Justin, Tom Brady and Julian Edelman. They're actually down at Disney World. Edelman won, which you get to go as the MVP, and then Brady went with him, and they're going to be part of the parade, which I think is kicking off next hour down in Disney World this afternoon. But anyhow, we're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor of OceanStateGuardian.com on this Political Monday. And Justin, I also want to touch on, as much as the state has certainly large deficits, $10 billion budget, things, kind of tricks and gimmicks that they thought would plug the holes, are falling drastically short. Number one, we got the word that the truck tolls are way off. And not only is the revenue way off, and then the Raimondo people try to say, well, we knew it was going to be way off, but that didn't stop them from putting the projection into the budget. And they were off by at least $35 million, I believe, in the truck toll. The gambling revenues are off by even more than that. The gambling revenues, Dominic Ruggiero said, if I read everything correctly, they thought it would be $67 million a month that people would be betting, and instead it's $13 million a month for various different reasons. Even the gimmicks that they were relying on to plug some of the massive shortfalls, they don't talk about Raimondo, they don't talk about cutting budgets, they don't talk about lowering taxes, they don't talk about stopping spending. They try to find new gimmick ways so they can continue to spend money, but even those are falling way short from what they thought they were going to be.
Well, yeah, there's so many of them, so many little areas where they try to increase money here, increase money there, talking about getting more money out of internet taxes and all that kind of thing. That's their strategy. And if you look at the way they do the initial budget, then there's a revised budget at the end of the year where essentially they just plug the hole they had, and then they base the next budget on that one. They've actually built in millions of dollars of buffer to ensure that their budget never actually goes down, just in the way they shuffle the numbers around. So they're experimenting here, they're experimenting there. My favorite part of the truck toll thing, if you look at on January 12th, there's a Providence Journal headline, Rhode Island reports truck toll volume exceeds prediction. And so now here we are on the 30th, the Providence Journal headline, over the same exact stock picture of a truck going under the tolls, Rhode Island truck toll delays are cutting into funding for DOT projects. It starts to feel all like a little show, and all of it to avoid having to do what you just said, having to sit down and say, what are we spending money on that we shouldn't be? Where can we start to restructure things so we're not constantly in deficit? They don't want to do that because it's all driven by these insider constituencies, not what's best for Rhode Islanders. And I think that the indications are that that's going to continue to be their strategies, to continue to find ways to put things into budget. The next one we're looking at is legalizing marijuana, which they're doing through the budget process, even though it's a massive cultural decision that ought to be made through its own independent legislation at the very least. They're going to shove that in the budget. They're going to project some amount of money they're going to get by legalizing drugs, and probably it'll come up short. Right up until the day they admit it's coming up short, of course, they'll tell us it's coming, all these signs are good. But that's the next thing, and then who knows what they'll go for next. When you've decided that government deserves your money and they just have to come up with some pretense to be able to take it, there's no limit. They can be very creative with this, and it'll be tolls, as people have predicted. It'll be car tolls next, and then who knows what'll come after that.
Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason to the spending, and I think, as we've talked about and others have talked about, anyone running a business or just your own personal finances, you would sit down, figure out how much money you have coming in. If someone gets a job, whatever it may be, that pays $50,000, okay, based on now, you're making $50,000. You then have an idea of what type of car you could live in, what type of an apartment or living situation you could afford, what you need for groceries and gas. They do it the exact opposite. I mean, they don't realize what would be reasonable money to work off. They do it backwards. They have all this money, and then they try to come up with these ridiculous ways to try to get that money, and it's all done, and it hurts the citizens. It doesn't help the state. It keeps things unfriendly. And before we, I let you go, I would like your thoughts on the hearings at the State House last week regarding the legislation. It was just in the committee. To me, I thought the pro-life movement that came out and the show of amount of people that turned out for that was very strong. It was very genuine. The other side, to me, it was very staged talking points. And I heard from someone that was there that they picked certain people. They would almost hand them a script what to say. It was a lot of it was 1960. There was a coat hanger. It was a lot of we're not going to go backwards. I thought the low point was Alorza sitting there with his infant son on his lap saying, well, you know, if this little guy, as much as we're enjoying him, if we weren't ready, we would have ended it right at the delivery, women and infants. That was, I've just never seen anything like that before. I don't know why the rest of the media hasn't picked up on that more. But just, I found the other side, they're almost cultish robotic, meaning they call themselves the pro-choice, but it's the progressives. It is become, Justin, it's very political because you can't be a member of the Democrat Party, really, if you're pro-life. Those that are absolutely scorned. But I found the pro-life speakers that went and appeared very genuine, more reflective of how people feel. I found the other side very programmed, sticking to talking points. If you watch some of it, at one point there were three women in a row who were constituents of Representative Tansey, and they were completely reading a script that were handed to them to read. And it was so, you know, we don't want to go backwards. Women need this. They'd throw out the word Donald Trump as much as they could. The coat hanger thing, which is so disgraceful. But I just want to hear your thoughts on that hearing and the two sides.
Well, I wasn't able to attend the hearing, but that was my sense. But I'd heard too was the pro-life side was much more energetic, much younger. There's a lot of money behind abortion, and a lot of it flows into the coffers of a single party, political party. So there's a lot of incentive to keep that going, and it's been made a pivot point for a lot of our politics in a way that I think generally is not healthy, detrimental to our entire political structure. But it's coming to the point where you really can't ignore things like Alorza getting up there with his baby to support abortion legislation, or as we were saying, the governor of Virginia supporting infanticide. At some point, I know there's a couple, Nicole and Tyler Rowley, who are starting it's an online mem they've done called Me Still Me, which they mailed to Governor Raimondo. It's a picture of their child in a sonogram, and it says me, and then a picture of the child born. It says still me. I mean, it's just so obvious. And with science and technology, we can see, we can trace. It's not a mystery. It's not like the woman just gets large and then there's a baby. We don't know what happens inside the body. We know, we can trace it. And when you get the activists, the quote pro-choice activists out there, you know, talking about how dangerous it is that a red state might pass a fetal heartbeat bill that says you can't kill a baby once you can detect a heartbeat, and they're worried that that'll go to Supreme Court, which might overrule Roe versus Wade. You know, folks, you got to reevaluate here. You're talking about once it has the child has a distinct heartbeat, you can make arguments, practical arguments, if you want. The Constitution doesn't cover that, the child, whatever, but you can't deny that it's a unique person in there. And as we were saying earlier with the arguments that it's sort of like depriving women of abortions, like depriving men of vasectomies. It's just the amount of, you use the word cult, and that's what it always comes back to feeling like. And it's just becoming so clear that it's hard to believe that they'll be able to maintain this for much longer without somehow frightening people. And it seems like that's not working quite as it used to.
Folks, he is the managing editor of OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Justin, excellent, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks, John. Look forward to it.
All right, folks. And again, it's John DePietro on this Patriot Monday. Patriots, how about Tom Brady and Julian Edelman? They are down in Disney World as we speak. And they're going to be part of the parade. The Patriots, though, they're expected to land at TF Green Airport shortly after 2 o'clock. And then, of course, the parade tomorrow. I think I have, I thought I have sound of them, Brady. So even though Edelman won, and if you win, whoever's the Super Bowl MVP, then you go to Disney World. And Tom Brady decided to tag along with Julian Edelman. So, oh, and they show them fighting with different swords. All right, I'll put it out on Twitter. But they're like fighting like backstage at like a dumpster or something. So they're having a really good time. Here we have. This was the Disney commercial that they filmed right afterwards. That is funny. What are they having an unbelievable time. Good for them. So Disney is loving it. Edelman and Brady down there together. How funny. Folks, 766-1380. So Edelman, he got to go to Disney World because he's the Super Bowl MVP. Brady said, you know what? I'm tagging along. So you don't know if, you don't know whether or not that his kids are down there. I haven't seen enough on that. But then they're going to be part of the parade. They're down there, and Brady decided to go. All right, folks, someone that was watching the game, big Patriot fan, and helping people along. And if you're wondering, hey, how come my phone doesn't have some of these things? Because you saw all the cell phones yesterday. It's our friend Sal from Metro by T-Mobile. Good afternoon, Sal.
And there you are, JD. Good afternoon.
Well, Sal, a lot of people going to the parade tomorrow, a lot of people watching, all the fans and family and Brady and everyone else on the field with their phones, and a lot of people probably saying, you know, Mike, I don't have the data to do that, or I need a new phone that I can do those things.
Yeah, if you're going to be going to the parade or if you're going to be going to an event where you want to take great pictures, this is a perfect opportunity to switch to Metro by T-Mobile, because right now, when you switch to us, one, you get a free phone, and two, you get an unbelievable plan, all for $60 a month. You get unlimited data, unlimited texting, unlimited talk. And the best part, that's got everybody coming in and calling me, like Mark from Woonsocket, Dave from North Providence, and Georgette from Johnson, is the unlimited Amazon Prime access, which gives you unlimited access to the two-day shipping they have, the unlimited music streaming, the movie watching, the discounts at Whole Foods, and all the great benefits that Amazon has to offer. This plan would normally cost you over $100 a year, but we're going to give it to you for free with a $60 plan. It's a great opportunity to switch to Metro by T-Mobile and save. If you have a small business or a small family, this is a great time to switch to Metro by T-Mobile. I'm so easy to find. If you're thinking about switching and you want to switch, I'm so easy to find. I'm in Johnson. I'm right next to Johnson Town Hall. If you know where Johnson Town Hall is, you know where I am, because I'm right next door. It's 1503 Atwood Avenue in Johnson. It's actually the Town Hall Plaza. So again, it's right off 295 next to Johnson Town Hall. And if you can't make it down, no problem. Just call me. My number is 332-5051, 332-5051. If you have any questions regarding the promotion, if you have, even if you have Bluetooth issues, if you have social media issues with the Facebook and Twitter, I can help you with that. I want to help you. But reach out to me. 332-5051.
Sal, not only that, but if people are hearing about all the different streaming apps that would be available, yeah, a lot of them, unless you have the proper phone, either A, your phone's going to be very slow, or B, they probably won't have enough data to support some of these apps with the streaming that's available.
Yeah, phone's very important, but the most important part is the plan as well. You know, the $60 gives you unlimited data. That's so important because there are some plans out there that have a capped amount of data, and once you hit that, that's it. It slows down. We're going to give you unlimited data. So, like I mentioned, the Amazon movie app, you can do that without having to worry about switching, slowing down. You can do the Hulu app, Netflix. There's so many great apps that you can utilize and not have to worry about slowing down with Metro by T-Mobile. So you make a good point there. And not just movies, music as well, because there are some apps out there, if you're listening to music and you don't have the proper data, it will slow down. And with this plan, you can stream as much as you want. You can listen to any album, any music, any song, whatever it may be. You don't have to worry about slowing down.
All right, folks, there he is, our friend Sal with Metro by T-Mobile. Thank you, Sal. Now, folks, I'm just checking some of the headlines right now. Good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. This portion of the program brought to you by K's. Stop it and see them. Cass Ave and Woonsocket, whether it's lunch, dinner, or a drink in the lounge, they're waiting for you at K's. Video shows man, police stopping man in Tom Brady jersey trying to sneak into the Patriots locker room. For the second time in recent years, Super Bowl history, the Patriots locker room was the center of a security incident. After the Patriots beat Seattle, Brady's jersey was stolen from the locker room by an international media member. There was no theft following the victory over the Rams, but video captures the police stopping what appeared to be a Patriot fan trying to sneak into the locker room. So, let's see. The man was wearing a jacket saying safe security, even though he did not work for Mercedes-Benz Stadium Security. Video shows police were repeatedly asked the man where he got the jacket. He could be heard responding, "She gave it to me." So he stole a security jacket and almost got into the locker room. A Georgia State Police trooper removes a security jacket from the man who was wearing a Brady jersey underneath. Let's see. Then you had the guy from Barstools was kicked out. That story, I don't know, is going on a little bit too long. And also, you know, in New Orleans, they're still upset over that call that they lost to the Rams. That how about the cover of the Time, the newspaper in New Orleans, Super Bowl, question mark? What Super Bowl? Super Troll in New Orleans, least watched ever by the BU. They refused. I think they had a rally in New Orleans over it. They're so upset. Super Bowl ratings, 10-year low. Well, number one, people are tired of the Patriots. Number two, the Rams, because they relocated, they don't have a big fan base. And number three, if you were not a fan and not watching it, no one was telling you, hey, you got to watch this game. It's incredible. So the New England Patriots, 13-3 victory over the Rams, wasn't the most exciting Super Bowl ever played. And it wasn't one for the history books. First of all, the Patriots' third consecutive victory of the Super Bowl, the matchup in Atlanta, was the lowest scoring Super Bowl ever. A dubious honor at best. The record had been held by the Dolphins beat the Redskins in 1973. I remember that game, 14-7. You know, it's all scoring. That is, had been the least watched. Secondly, the Patriot quarterback Tom Brady is the first NFL player to win 6 Super Bowl rings. With his 6th Super Bowl win for the Patriots, the 41-year-old has also been in 9 Super Bowls over his career, more than any other NFL player. However, when it comes to ratings, it is not what anyone's going to brag about. Shown on CBS for the first time since 2016, ad spots were $5 million each. The Rams' loss scored a 44 in meted market results. Put that in the starkest day of light. That's a dip of 5% from the Super Bowl last year. So, but that was an incredible game between Philly and Philadelphia and the Patriots. But folks, if you back it up, I still go, if you go to, there's other ways that people can watch it. There's more parties than ever. And when you have all those people that are there watching it, they don't all count for the ratings. So I still think it's more popular than it's ever been. But you look at, so the Patriots in 2015 beat the Seahawks. 2016, the Broncos beat Carolina. That was a dud. But 2017, Patriots beat the Falcons. 2018,
the Eagles beat the Patriots. And then 2019, Patriots beat the Rams. So the last 3 years, when you think about that, of the last 3 years, if Malcolm Butler had played in last year's Super Bowl, I believe they would have won. It would have been three in a row. It would have been the comeback against the Falcons. It would have been beating the Eagles and then beating the Rams. It would have been three in a row. But when you go to 15, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then it would have been that they would have won four of the last five. Instead, of the last 5 years, they've won three of the last five, which is still remarkable and incredible. So, and then the 2011 Super Bowl didn't do that great. Green Bay against the Steelers. I still say it's bigger than ever, but I think a big part of it is just that people watch it different places and stream it, and there's different devices. Hey, folks, I want to remind you about Tremendous Detail. Now, this winter, the wear and tear on your vehicle with a lot of the guck on the roads and the road salt and everything else, get your vehicle Tremendous Detail with Tremendous Detail. Online, TremendousDetail.com. They're located 178 Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham. Tremendous Detail, professional detailing, certified ceramic coating. You can call them at 508-479-5400. 508-479-5400. Tremendous Detail, and online, TremendousDetail.com. Certified ceramic coating specialists. Wait to see the job they do on your vehicle. They also do pickup and delivery, so you could arrange with them to drop it off. Then they'll drop you at work, and then they'll maybe get you at lunch or afterwards. Packages and services available, all shapes and sizes. Now, if you get a brand new car, listen, protect your investment. Take it to Tremendous Detail. Or if you have a used car, any car, but especially if you're trying to sell a car, one way that you certainly could do it and improve the value would be to take it to Tremendous Detail. Tremendous Detail. They are tremendous. I stopped in there. I viewed their operation. Folks, it was absolutely tremendous is what it was. But no, it was incredible. Remember, online, TremendousDetail.com, or call them at 508-479-5400. 508-479-5400. And online at TremendousDetail.com. Tremendous Detail. Stop in. See their brand new operation, 178 Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham. Friendly, educated staff, and their newly renovated facility. It is first rate. It is Tremendous Detail for your vehicle. You're going to love it. If you haven't had it done, but especially make sure you ask them about it. It is incredible. It'll just, when it rains, it'll just run right off your car. The equipment, the methods, all the competitive prices. And once you visit them, you won't take your vehicle anywhere else. And the jade quartz ceramic coating on your car will just be incredible. Tremendous Detail. You can pop by and see them, 178 Pulaski Boulevard in Bellingham, or call them at 508-479-5400 and online at TremendousDetail.com. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. So I admit, everybody, a little sluggish. That was incredible yesterday, last night. The build-up to the game, I think everybody is just blown out and exhausted. Let's see, some of the email. People didn't think that was a good game. Don't love the game in an era. Scoring's an all-time high. Defensive battle. Game could change on any play. Great special teams play. That is all true. But the way the game has adjusted, it has become more offense. And so people, I understand people are more used to that. I do.
He's John DePietro.
I am.
He's really in the know.
I try to be.
With his talk show.
I do have a talk show.
On your radio.
AM 1380.
He's John DePietro.
99 FM.
Tune in your radio. Johnny D.
All right, folks, listen again. What an incredible win for the Patriots. Tomorrow is the parade. Tomorrow we'll have more tickets for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Congratulations to our winner from today. Remember, you can call the box office at 421-ARTS, 401-421-ARTS, or log on at ppacri.org. It's John DePietro. Listen, everybody get some rest. And then State of the Union tomorrow night. Leave it right here for the Dion Experience on AM 1380, 99 FM, WNRI.
WNRI and W236CW Woonsocket, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.